नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So this afternoon, I would like to read two verses from Bhagavad Gita. First, one verse only, without Srila Prabhupada's extended purport, because I wish to get to the essence of the discussion, which is an elaboration on the principle of knowledge. Is that all right? Everyone in this room has heard their parents say to them at some point, pay attention to your education. Education is the cornerstone to success in life. Without education, you can't achieve anything. Without education, you can't obtain anything. Success in life depends on education, etc., etc., etc. Right? In every country of the world, in every language of the world, all parents say to their children, stop being a rascal. Stop being a nonsense. Go do your homework. How will you ever get a job? Now the world has become completely obsessed with the notion that successful adulthood means getting a job. We have 24 hours in our day. Hare Krishna Prabhu. 8 hours. Supposedly, is supposed to be dedicated to a job. Right? I am going to sell these 8 hours to the top bidder, the highest bidder. And depending on how much information or knowledge, so-called, or education I can cram into my youth and master, I can increase the value of those hours. Then I take them out. And as Srila Prabhupada said, I take that diploma like a puppy, I roll it up like a newspaper, put it in my teeth and go door to door. Do you have a job? With my tail wagging. Huh? Right now in America, they're planning on electing a new president. Hopefully they will elect a new president. And the candidates, they're always standing in front of the crowd promising that the government is going to create what? Jobs. Right? They even break the year up into quarters. When you read the financial section of the newspaper, this quarter, that quarter, the third quarter, the fourth quarter, there were so many jobs created and so many jobs lost. Isn't it? So this whole notion of getting an education in order to get a job has become so ingrained in modern man that he has completely separated himself from understanding what is the real purpose of education. Because they have no information about where they come from and where they go, none that they take seriously anyway. There's so many different theories, right? But none that they accept absolutely. So consequently, their conception of education is how to facilitate the immediate needs of the body. The body has some basic necessities: eating, sleeping, mating, and protecting. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would describe that as fearing. Sometimes he would call it defending. Eating, sleeping, bathing, defending. But mostly he would say, at least in the beginnings of his writings, he would call it fearing, which is actually a much more all-inclusive word. Is it not? Fearing. Someone comes into the room and says, Prabhuji, it's time for prasadam. Immediately people think, is there enough? Right? Some people are thinking, is there enough prasadam? Will I get prasadam? Huh? Like that. It's an immediate thought. The mothers are thinking, I want to hear the lecture, but where's my child? Where's my child? Right? There's always fear. So eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing. These four activities are there. So man has devised so many different methods of addressing these issues. Dealing with these, what we would call pressing concerns. But Krishna gives a hint in Bhagavad Gita that why bother solving those problems at all if you don't gain information that will inform you of the necessity of solving those problems once and for all. Otherwise, you'll have to keep solving them over and over and over and over again. You see? So you have to begin from that premise. One must begin from that premise. Just like if one is sick and is experiencing a disease, a difficulty with a disease, he doesn't only want to know what the disease is, but he needs to also know how he contracted the disease, or what is the best way to consider that I may have contracted this disease. And then he has to know, all right, now what to do so I don't get this again. You see? Otherwise, what's the point? You solve it once, and then you have to solve it again. And then again, and again, and again. You see? So, the further one goes away from Vrindavan and Mayapur, the more one is ignorant of this reality. The more one goes west, one becomes removed from this knowledge. The more one comes close to Vrindavan and Mayapur, the more one is awakened to this very, very important information. So in Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter, I'll read the verse and the translation. Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Pratyak Savagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartamavyayam. Raja Vidya. Raja means king, yeah? And Vidya means education or knowledge. So there may be so many departments of knowledge in this world, so many technical aspects, scientific aspects. But there is one king of all education. And here Krishna is explaining. It is this Krishna consciousness. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting, and it is joyfully performed. Joyfully performed. The beginning of knowledge is to know that we don't know. That is the beginning. Sometimes you meet young people, 17, 18, 19, right? And they know so much. My mother used to say, "Ah, you think you know so much now, wait till later, and you'll find out you don't know anything at all." And everyone's mother says that too. So when you're 17, 18, 19, you may think you know so much, but gradually, as you become exposed to the reality of this world, you realize you know so little. We know so very little. Even about what's going on in this world, we know so little. Isn't it? Our capacity to know anything is based upon, essentially, our senses. What we can see, what we can hear, what we can taste, what we can touch, what we can smell. And when any one of these senses becomes weakened, our ability to function here becomes diminished. If you've ever had the experience of losing your taste buds, I had that experience. Losing my taste buds for about 5 months, 6 months. What an unpleasant experience that is. We take our taste buds for granted. Each one of them, the tongue, is so many different endings, nerve endings. The taste buds correspond to the various rasas. Yeah? Traditionally, in an Indian meal, depending on the region of India, they try to meet these rasas in one meal. Right? Bitter, salty, sweet, sour, pungent, like that. And it's understood through the Ayurveda that if you meet these rasas, then you are going to be providing the body the various nutrients that you need. So make sure the meal includes this, it includes this, it includes this, blah, blah, blah. And without those taste buds, one's impetus or inspiration to eat becomes greatly diminished. You'll have no desire to eat. Your wife will come to you or your mother will come to you and say, "Oh, take this, it's good for you." "It may be good for me, but it tastes horrible. You don't want it." So, our senses are the means by which we acquire knowledge in this world. But the most important sense for acquiring the most important knowledge is our sense of hearing. Srila Prabhupada has said that we do not go to a sadhu and determine his position, his bona fides, for any other reason other than hearing. And what we hear from the sadhu must be supported by the shastra. Guru, sadhu, shastra. I'm reading one book upstairs, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. And the subtitle of the book is, "If you follow them, they will follow you." You understand? If you follow these 21 rules of leadership, then the followers will follow you. That's the notion. We also understand this because Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, "Yad yad acharati shrestas." Yes? That as a great man does, common men will follow. But the sadhu is not inventing. He's not arbitrarily inventing or creating some philosophy or some truth. He's merely a mailman, a postman, a courier. Right? Like the DHL or the FedEx. Shows up at your door, knocks on the door. You come to the door, he's got a package for you. You sign, "Thank you," and he leaves. He's only delivering what Krishna has delivered. So, the secret of all secrets cannot be obtained in a materialistic manner. It cannot be obtained or achieved in a negotiation, a business-like arrangement. Two men sit down, huh? Or just like in an arranged marriage, there's some notion of business here, right? The father is promoting the girl, the father and mother are promoting the girl as being qualified in this way, qualified in that way, qualified in this way, right? And the father of the boy is offering his bona fides. The boy is qualified in this way, qualified in that way. And then they make some negotiation, right? In the West, it's not done like that. In the West, they just, on the basis of the eyes, that's all. The girl is pretty, the boy is handsome, should be a good match. Generally, it turns out 50% of the time to be a match made in hell. That's the truth. 50% of the divorces, the marriages in America at least, end in divorce because they make their arrangement on the basis of the eyes. No knowledge. They don't understand long term. So, here, it is explained that this knowledge, Krishna consciousness, is the secret of all secrets, and therefore it cannot be obtained in such a fashion. It must be obtained in another way. You have to pay a different price, okay, to get that information. Not only to get the information, but to be able to retain it, to be able to hold it, to embrace it, to fix it in your consciousness so that it becomes part of you. That's different. And I'm going to read now what Krishna explains. How he explains this point. This happens to be four of my favorite verses in Bhagavad Gita. I read them probably at least once a week with the purport. And I recommend you, all of you, to please take full advantage of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita daily, and especially these four verses from the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, text number 8 through 12. Okay? Everyone remember that? 13, 8 through 12. I will read the English only. And then Srila Prabhupada's most dazzling purport. Dazzling. Sometimes we see that a person requires very little decoration to dazzle, isn't it? In the material world, people attempt to dazzle with various material external qualities, beauty, so-called knowledge, wealth, right? Fame, strength. And when they have some degree of these qualities, they like to flaunt them, isn't it? If a man or woman is particularly beautiful, in the Western world, they do everything they can to draw your attention to that beauty. They're not shy about that. If a man is going to the gymnasium every day and building up his muscles, right? He doesn't hide that. Then he goes out, he buys clothes that show all of his muscles, right? The women, they go out and buy clothes, even clothes that we can't see. But they know they're wearing. And they feel beautiful. A man's very wealthy, he wants to buy a big car. So everyone can see the car he's driving, the home he has. You see? He wants to demonstrate his opulence. But sometimes it is the simpler qualities, the simpler realities that dazzle. Someone who never lies, who always speaks the truth. Srila Prabhupada writes in the first canto that a woman who is exceedingly shy dazzles and can actually make men of the highest caliber step to the side and allow them to pass. You see? Someone who's generous, but never advertises their generosity. Never promotes themselves as being generous. That's a dazzling quality. Someone who's very submissive to his superiors. That's a dazzling quality. And someone who can speak concise and beautiful truth with a minimum amount of words and a maximum amount of effect is described as dazzlingly eloquent. Dazzlingly eloquent. And I would suggest all of you take advantage, like you're doing here. You have a little notepad. I do this myself when I'm reading Srila Prabhupada's books. Because one time Srila Prabhupada told me personally, I had the great, great fortune of hearing this from him directly. He said, because we offered to Srila Prabhupada in a discussion, we were given a chance to go on a walk with Srila Prabhupada, and we told him that oftentimes people become upset because at that particular period in Srila Prabhupada's history of the movement, he was translating and publishing and then selling the successive sections of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now we all know that the Chaitanya Charitamrita is considered the postgraduate study of Krishna consciousness. Alright? So it is difficult sometimes for a common man, or we in our estimation, for a common man to receive a copy of, say, Adi Leela Volume 3 and grasp everything that is being discussed there. You see? So Srila Prabhupada was, he at 1976, Srila Prabhupada had decided that he wanted to finish the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Even before finishing Bhagavatam, he wanted to finish the CC. So he came to Los Angeles. He called ahead and actually informed the devotees there that I want the Chaitanya Charitamrita to be finished in 3 months. And at that time, I think we only had about 5 or 6 volumes done. And Rameshwar Prabhu at that time, he was a brahmachari, he told Srila Prabhupada's secretary who was communicating with him this desire, he said, I don't think that's possible. Simply, we do not have the staff, we don't have the artists, we don't have everything arranged that would be able to facilitate this. And Srila Prabhupada had his secretary call back and say, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. We will figure out how to accomplish this. And the next day, Srila Prabhupada, I believe he was in Hawaii, and from there, he flew from Hawaii to Los Angeles, unannounced, until he was departing. So 5 hours before arriving, he had his secretary call and say, we're arriving in Los Angeles in 5 hours. You better get ready. Srila Prabhupada is determined to get the Chaitanya Charitamrita published. So, in order to print each volume, Srila Prabhupada would print maybe 5,000 copies. I don't remember exactly. 5,000, 10,000. And with the money earned from the printing of that book, Srila Prabhupada would then print the next volume. And with the money earned from that book, he would print the next volume. So, that's when Prabhupada had written a letter saying, practically I'm whipping you. Distribute books, distribute books, distribute books. He actually used those words, whipping. Practically, I'm whipping you. So, we were going out faithfully every day. And we were selling Chaitanya Charitamritas, Mudge's 5, Mudge's 6, Mudge's 7, to businessmen and students and housewives and just anybody. Anyone we could stop. Anyone we could get them to take the book. And we'd tell them what we could tell them about the book. And oftentimes they would open it up. And it would, you know how it is. Sometimes there's 2 or 3 English sentences on a page. And the rest is Bengali and Sanskrit. Right? in a little purport. So sometimes someone would come back an hour after purchasing the book. They would be sitting and waiting for their airplane or whatever, and they would come back. And they would complain, "Hey, you sold me this book. There's no English in this book. I want my money back." And we say, "No, no, there's English in there. Lots of English here." And we try to convince them. Sometimes we could convince them and sometimes we couldn't. So we told Srila Prabhupada this. So Prabhupada was listening. And we said, "Prabhupada, sometimes on one page there's only one or two lines of English." And Prabhupada interrupted us. And he said, "Yes, but if they read that one line, their entire life can be transformed." Srila Prabhupada ki. So ever since that time, I cannot help myself. When I read Prabhupada's books, it's impossible for me not to, like, almost like mentally turn sentences into italics. You know what is an italic? Italics is a sort of fancy printing. You know, it changes the vision of the letters so that the letters are highlighted. And if you want to alter it even more, you change the color. Now with computers, you're writing, you want to highlight something, you can italic, you can change the color, you can underline it, right? So you really, that sentence sticks out. You understand? Just like yesterday, I was reading in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the talks between Narada Muni and Prachini Barishat, one purport, Srila Prabhupada said, "The only pleasure of a man in the material world is producing more sex enjoyers." Think about that. Everything a man does to acquire a woman, right? He has to build up his bank balance. He has to, in so many ways, create the environment within which she will feel safe. Because in the material world, we want love, but in the material world, there's no such thing. Only love here that's even remotely close to the love of the soul for Krishna, or Krishna for the soul, is the love of a parent for the child when the child is young. Srila Prabhupada said that. That's the only real love. Everything else is essentially meeting conditions. And when the conditions are met, we say, "I love you so much. Thank you for meeting my conditions." You see? And we get all warm and fuzzy about that until later we start to scratch our head and go, "Wait a minute. That's not love. I mean, meeting your conditions? Yes, you got me, you bought me everything I asked for. You've provided such a nice environment within which I can survive. I can eat. I can sleep comfortably. I can enjoy. I love you so much." And then later, he comes home and he says, "Honey, guess what? I lost my job." And from there, it's all downhill. Huh? Pretty soon, the anxiety steps in. Then the quarreling. Then the man becomes frustrated. "I thought you loved me no matter what." "Well, I do love you no matter what, as long as you have a job." You see? And we cannot fault anyone in this material world for not actually loving us. Not like that. We cannot fault them. Neither the female can fault the male, neither the male can fault the female. Why? Because this material world is designed by Krishna's arrangement, designed to trick us, to frustrate us, to send us back home, back to Godhead. There's a saying, starve a fever, feed a cold. Or is it the other way around? I think it's starve a fever, feed a cold. It was one time told to me that if you want a guest to leave, then you simply don't feed him. Isn't it? If you want a guest to leave, you don't feed him. You simply say, we don't have anything to eat. Oh, well, it's, oh, look at the time. It's time to go. Sorry. But if you make all arrangements, right, for the guest, he doesn't want to leave. So Krishna, he's made this material world. The men, we all think we're males. We all think we're men. We're men. We're competent. We're providing. We're protecting. We're entertaining. We're defending. But we can't do any of that unless Krishna himself gives us the means. We do everything we do on borrowed funds, on borrowed resources, on borrowed energy, on borrowed facility. Isn't it? Our youthful vigor, our handsome physique, our ambition, our capacity to learn and to turn that learning into resources, and with those resources then come and say to some young lady, I will protect you, I will feed you, I will clothe you, I will give you your family. Right? And then gradually, as we grow and mature in our life, we realize this is all borrowed. Srila Prabhupada actually uses this expression in the second canto, puffed up with borrowed plumes. You know that expression? Borrowed plumes. Plumes are feathers. Various cultures in the world, they take feathers from various birds and they decorate, just like Krishna decorates himself with peacock feather. Okay? So in other cultures, they decorate with other feathers. In Africa, they decorate with ostrich feathers, the Zulu and Maasai. And they go through a very elaborate arrangement. But where do they get these feathers? Where do they get them? From a bird. They have to take them from the bird. You see? So Srila Prabhupada uses that expression, puffed up with borrowed plumes. So yesterday, in fourth canto, Srila Prabhupada said, the only pleasure of a materialistic man in this world is producing sex enjoyers. And I thought, bam, wow. That's like a punch right in the nose. Huh? It's a startling affront to how we would normally describe social interaction, family interaction, grandfathers and grandmothers and uncles and aunts. Huh? But really, what are we doing? We are creating the next generation of sense enjoyers. People who are going to grow up, compete with each other and with us for our time, our resources, our energy. Huh? And what a man would never give to a robber on the street. Never in a million years. Just hand over. I know personally, I was there was an attempt to take my money once, twice actually in my life. And each time I looked at the man to see if he had a weapon. He was my size. So I looked at him and I thought, if you have no weapon, you cannot take anything from me. The first time he had a weapon, so I gave it to him. The second time he had no weapon, then I said, you can't take anything from me. You see? And once I said that, he looked at me and he realized, he's right, I can't take anything from you. Not without a struggle. I'll have to pay some price. And he considered, nah, I don't want to pay that price. And he walked away. You see? No one will just hand over. Just like now America is telling Iraq, we want you to give us control of your country. And Iraq is saying, we're not going to hand that over to you. Come and get it. And every day they're battling. You see? But a woman, by dint of her nature and her needs, her necessities, she simply has to smile shyly and sweetly, and most importantly, agree not to argue. If she can agree not to argue, she stands a much better chance of sustaining her protected position for a long time. If she can't understand that, and she cannot understand the necessity to not argue, to not quarrel, constantly quarrel, then she gets everything. So what the robber can't take from you, she gets with a smile. You see? Very easily. That's this material world. It's designed like this. I hope the ladies do not think I'm faulting them. No, no. I'm not. I'm simply telling you that this is what this material world is. We are here. We are Sat-Chit Ananda. We are eternal, each of us. And we are full of knowledge. And we are full of joy, bliss, happiness. But it is manifested in this temporary environment. You see? Light comes through the window, one color. But if it comes through colored glass, right? If it comes through a stained glass window with blues and greens and yellows and purples and reds, that light, all right? Or if it comes through a prism and gets refracted, then we can see the various colors that actually make up the spectrum of light. You understand the example? So, our desire to remain permanently filled with knowledge and happy is transmitted through this material energy where everything is temporary and full of suffering. So, it is impossible for us to approach one another in this material world perfectly. It's not possible. Because we are looking to survive and to enjoy our survival. So if we're fortunate, we come in contact with the Vedic knowledge and the spiritual master. So in the 13th chapter, text number 8, you will find many such sentences where Srila Prabhupada said, yes, but if they read one line, their whole life could be transformed. This purport has so many you can't count them. And you can go back and read them over and over and over again. Okay? So, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna and he says, humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, the absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, disease, and old age, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth, all of these I declare to be knowledge. And besides these, whatever there is may be ignorance. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. Excuse me. Is ignorance. 18 principles of knowledge, the king of education. And this is what we are meant to acquire from our teachers. Not simply some skill that we can then market so that we can, instead of detaching ourselves from the general mass of people, we can go out and merge with the general mass of people and facilitate the reproduction of one generation after another, after another, after another, of sense enjoyer. You see? Because before we are a society, each of us is an individual. This is a very important point. Before we are a social body, we are a spiritual body, trapped in a singular material body. And therefore, our conduct within society will be greatly affected to the extent that we understand the full import of that position. If we understand ourselves first as a spiritual body, trapped within a material body, interacting with literally millions of other spiritual bodies so similarly trapped in material bodies. Once we understand that, then our ability to make our life successful is standing on solid ground. Very solid ground. So, Srila Prabhupada's dazzling purport. This process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements, as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. Sentence number one. This knowledge is not telling us how to interact with matter. It is telling us how to get out of matter. You see? The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of the 24 elements, and the process of knowledge, as described herein, is the means to get out of it. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse, Mayi Chanyanya Jogina Bhaktir Avyabhicharini. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. In other words, stop there. Don't bother. Why bother? Unless we know, unless our knowledge culminates in action, unless our writing culminates in action, unless our communication culminates in action, what is the point? Has any of your parents ever said to you, hey, what am I doing? Talking to myself here? Huh? Has anyone ever said that to you? I'm speaking. Just like in the military, they have an expression, fire for effect. Fire for effect. Don't just waste the ammunition. Make sure it lands where it's supposed to. You understand? So here, Srila Prabhupada is saying, the culmination of our knowledge should be that we get out of the material world. If we don't, if the culmination of our knowledge doesn't result in devotional service and getting out of the material world, we have wasted our time. But if one takes to devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items will automatically develop within him. As stated in the Bhagavatam, Jasyasti Bhaktir Bhagavati Akinchana Saravayar Gunai Satra Samaste Sura. All the good qualities of knowledge develop in one who has attained the stage of devotional service. The principle of accepting a spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, is essential. Even for one who takes to devotional service, it is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. The Supreme Personality of God at Sri Krishna clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. Again, beautiful sentence. Srila Prabhupada says, anything. Think of that word, anything That includes everything. Anything which is speculated beyond this is nonsense. What is nonsense? It means it makes no sense. It doesn't result in anything logical or reasonable. You see? It makes no sense. When I'm finished with this class, I'm going to go back to the guest house, I'm going to go to the roof, and I'm going to stand on the edge, and I'm going to jump off. Why, Pragosh? Why are you going to do that? I don't know. I just want to. But Pragosh, if you do that, the chances of you killing yourself are very, very great. That's all right. I can do it if I want to. It's my body. Like the child says, you're not the boss of me. Right? So in this material world, everyone is acting in a way which does not sensibly result in the attainment of their actual quest. We are eternal. We are full of bliss. And we are full of knowledge. So our quest has to be driven. It has to be directed towards achieving that, reestablishing ourselves in full knowledge, full bliss, and permanent. Permanent. So, Srila Prabhupada then says, as for knowledge outlined here, the items may be analyzed as follows. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. The material conception of life makes us very eager to receive honor from others. But from the point of view of a man in perfect knowledge who knows that he is not this body, anything, honor or dishonor, pertaining to this body is useless. One should not be hankering after this material deception. What a beautiful word, isn't it? Material deception. In New York City, we have these characters sometimes. They come out on the street at night on Broadway. And they do two things. Sometimes they do it with cards. Sometimes they do it with cups. With a little, either a piece of cloth or a little marble. And they do this. You know, and they challenge you. Guess under which cup the marble is. Have you ever seen this in India? Do they do that too? Sometimes? And then the cards go, okay, who's got the card? Who's got the card? Where's the card? Who can tell me where the card is? All right. So what they do is they work with another man. Huh? One of my godbrothers in Belgium, one time I came back from Sankirtan back in 1981. And my godbrother was in the Brahmacharya ashram, and he was so discouraged and depressed. And it wasn't like him. I said, Prabhu, what's the matter? You look like your mother died or something. What happened? He said, oh, Prabhu, I can't tell you. I'm too embarrassed. I can't tell you. I said, Prabhu, it couldn't be that bad. What happened? He said, I lost my entire Sankirtan collection. I said, how? You lost your entire Sankirtan? How did that happen? He said, I lost $250. I said, what, did it fall out of your pocket? He said, no, I gambled it away. I said, you what? How did that happen? Where did you, what? I was with you all afternoon. You left me for 30 minutes. He said, yeah, but yesterday I saw this guy in the street and I thought I figured it out. I could figure out how he was doing that with the cards. And so today I just couldn't help myself. I went back there and I thought, oh, I could bet my Sankirtan collection and get three times the money. I said, Prabhu, you're kidding me. He said, yeah, but I saw this other guy. He was winning. He kept winning. I said, Prabhu, he works with him. He wins 3-4 times in a row. And then you step up like a dummy and lose everything. He said, no, I didn't. I won twice. I won. Oh, you won a little. Okay, he lets you win. And then took it all. Right? Deception. Deception. You see? So Prabhupada uses this word here. It's such a wonderful word. He says, One should not be hankering after this material deception.
What is that?
To be honored by someone else. Why? Because we're in this material world. We're in a prison house. Someone starts to honor me because I'm handsome or smart or have a little money, but I'm still in prison. You're in prison and someone comes up and says, I love your uniform. That's really you. You know, you're like, what are you talking to me? Get away from me. You know. Or they come into your cell. Boy, I like what you've done with your cell. This is beautiful. When did you paint this place? This is amazing. You know? And you're like, get away from me. You know, you always see these prison movies where the prisoners are always lifting weights, right? Life in prison, and they spend the whole time lifting weights. I'm always scratching my head. What are you doing that for? You know? It's insanity. We're in prison. There's nothing to be praised about. But still, you see, we want to be praised. The prophet said, don't be fooled by this deception. You are in prison. Every time we notice a beautiful woman, we should know, I'm still carrying that shackles, right? Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita, in the ordinary prison house, the prisoners are shackled with bars and chains, right? And in the material world, the jiva is shackled with attraction and attachment to the opposite sex. Every species of life, right? You see, in the different species of life, when they bring a female into the presence of a bunch of males, immediately the males are fighting. Isn't it? You go to the farm. I lived in New Tullivan, Mississippi, at one of our farms there. And we have 150 cows, but 7 bulls. So whenever one of the cows would come into the presence of the bulls would immediately just turn on each other and start fighting, clashing. There was one particular bull, his name was Giddy Hari. He was a big Brahma bull. All the other bulls were, you know, just normal like American cattle, but this guy was a thug. He was so big. He was taller than me at the shoulder. And he just loved a challenge. So immediately, so all the Gurukul boys used to go and watch them fight. They would bet on who would win. So we know that we're still attracted to the opposite sex means we're still in prison. We're still in prison. And we have yet to go before we can get out. Okay? So, we cannot be fooled by this deception. People are very anxious to be famous for their religion. And consequently, sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles and then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. As for actual advancement in spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he's progressing. He can judge by these items. Okay, here we go. Nonviolence. Now, most people think nonviolence means not to kill or harm, right? Listen to our Acharya Srila Prabhupada. Nonviolence is generally taken to mean not killing or destroying the body, but actually, nonviolence means not to put others into distress. People in general are trapped by ignorance in the material concept of life, and they perpetually suffer material pains. So unless one sets about to elevate people to spiritual knowledge, one is practicing violence. The fact of the matter is, once you become introduced to Krishna consciousness, if you don't do something to introduce someone to Krishna consciousness, you are violent. You are committing an act of violence. So first and foremost, Srila Prabhupada says, exemplify what we've been given. Okay? So that people see. When they see you only, they're compelled to inquire. Why are you so peaceful? Why are you so calm? Why are you so kind? Why are you so patient? Why are you so detached? You see? Then we can explain. Why? Prabhupada one time, how many have heard this? Prabhupada wrote this in a letter. He said, this movement will go down in history for being revolutionary clean. Does anybody remember this? Prabhupada wrote this in a letter. He said this movement would be known for its cleanliness. That when they see the devotees, they're struck by how clean they are personally. When they come to the temple, they're struck by how clean the temple is, the altar is, the prasadam rooms, etc. Just the mere fact that the devotees' language is clean. They don't use harsh speech. Isn't it? They don't use bad words that represent anger or lust. You see? So people are struck by that. They're impressed by that. So Prabhupada said here, we have to elevate. Prabhupada says, one should try his best to distribute real knowledge to the people so that they may become enlightened and leave this material entanglement. Then he says, that is nonviolence. Huh? Isn't that beautiful? So much more thorough, so much more complete, other than just, we don't eat meat or fish. You see? Much more thorough. Okay. Tolerance means that one should be practiced to bear insult and dishonor from others. If one is engaged in the advancement of spiritual knowledge, there will be so many insults and much dishonor from others. This is expected because material nature is so constituted. Even a boy like Prahlad, who only 5 years old, was engaged in the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, was endangered when his father became antagonistic to his devotion. The father tried to kill him in so many ways, but Prahlad tolerated him. So there may be so many impediments to making advancement in spiritual knowledge, but we should be tolerant and continue our progress with determination. Sometimes people will criticize you for giving so much attention to your spiritual life, and they will think that you are neglecting your material life. You see? But you cannot allow that to affect you. So we tolerate. So many people come to Krishna consciousness, to Srila Prabhupada's movement, and they're very successful in the material world. Very successful in so many ways. And then they come to Krishna consciousness and their family members become worried. The wife becomes worried, or the husband becomes worried. Uh-oh. Now you're chasing after the sadhus. What does this mean for me? Huh? Are you going to be just as ambitious and as aggressive as you were before to be successful? A young boy comes home from college. Young girl comes home from school. Tells her mother, guess what, mother? Guess what I met today? I met a sadhu. You know what a sadhu means? A sadhu is one who cuts all material attachments. And the mother's thinking, oh, that's great. I have to hear this from my daughter? I've taken care of you for 20 years and now you're telling me you're all excited about cutting your relationships? I'm arranging a marriage for you and you say, no, I don't want to marry him. He's not a sadhu. You want to marry a sadhu? He'll have no money. That's okay. But he'll have Krishna. He'll give me Krishna. Huh? Boy comes home, he says, I met a sadhu. Now I'm going to Vrindavan. But wait, you're in third year medical school. This is the most important time. I met a sadhu. And 1 hour after meeting the sadhu, I want Krishna. I want devotional service. Huh? Or someone comes in the house like I did. I didn't meet a sadhu. Not directly, but I met the sadhu in the form of his book. Okay? And I read the book. And it was just like someone, you know, Prabhupada says, you can wake a sleeping man, but you cannot wake a man who is pretending to be asleep. Right? So I was a genuine sleeping man. I wasn't pretending to be asleep. I was genuinely asleep. And so Prabhupada came along with a big bucket of cold water. And he went, shh, wake up, spirit soul. Wake up. And immediately, my whole life changed. Everything changed. Just like an instant. It was as if the earth had been struck by an asteroid? Or a comet? Like that? And immediately the weather changes and it becomes cold. Where it's cold, it's hot. Where it's hot, it's cold. At least that's what the scientists say. I don't believe it all, but anyway, you know. They say like that. Dinosaurs die and humans come out of the water and blah, blah, blah. You know. So, this is, you know, an instant change. So Srila Prabhupada, he came along. And that's what happens when they encounter Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. Simplicity means that without diplomacy, one should be so straightforward that he can disclose the real truth even to an enemy. As for acceptance of the spiritual master, another line. Prabhupada says, as for acceptance of the spiritual master, that is essential. Because without the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot progress in spiritual science. One should approach the spiritual master with all humility and offer him all services so that he will be pleased to bestow his blessings upon the disciple. Because a bona fide spiritual master is a representative of Krishna, if he bestows any blessings upon his disciple, that will make the disciple immediately advance without the disciples following the regulative principles. Or the regulative principles will be easier for one who has served the spiritual master without reservation. You remember I said before, if the wife will simply serve without arguing, right? Then the husband is naturally inclined to take full care of her. If she simply says, yes, Prabhu, then anything she wants, she can get anything. It's a fact. I have twin daughters also. There's nothing they can't get if they approach me correctly. But if they approach me incorrectly, there's nothing they can get. You see? If the wife says, yes, Prabhu, she gets everything. If she says, yes, but... Uh-oh. Now we have a problem. Right? Right? Now we have a problem. So the spiritual master, he says this, that, and the other, and we say, yes, but... No, you don't understand. You cannot grasp Krishna consciousness. You don't say yes, but. You simply say yes, Prabhu. Prabhupada. Yes. And then everything is bestowed. Cleanliness is essential for making advancement in spiritual life. There are two kinds of cleanliness, external and internal. External cleanliness means taking a bath. But for internal cleanliness, one has to think of Krishna always and chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Very simple. Prabhupada says, this process cleans the accumulated dust of past karma from the mind. Cheto darpana marjanam, bhava maha devagni nirvapanam, Shri Akkairava Chandrikavataranam Vidyavadhu Jivanam. Vidyavadhu Jivanam, the life of all transcendental knowledge. And it cleanses the heart of the accumulated dust that is developed there over a period of years and years and years and years and years. Srila Prabhupada one time said, you have given millions and millions and millions of lifetimes to your senses. In so many bodies, why not just give one life to Krishna and see what the result is? Huh? Now, Srila Prabhupada says, the impediment to doing that is the accumulated subtle attachment we have developed in our subtle body, in our mind, to this, to doing that. But in the Kali Yuga, Kaler Dosha Nidhe Rajan, Asti Heko Mahadguna, Kirtanad Eva Krishnasya, Mukta Sangam Param Vrajet. Even though the age we live in is so difficult, so agitated, so contaminated, even though it's like that, just this chanting of the Lord's holy name is sufficient. Krishna becomes so satisfied when he sees us chanting his name. He becomes so pleased that he automatically cleanses us. Steadiness means that one should be very determined to make progress in spiritual life. Without such determination, one cannot make tangible progress. And self-control means that one should not accept anything which is detrimental to the path of spiritual progress. Okay? In third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, near the end of the third chapter, Srila Prabhupada writes in one of his purports, I'll give you the exact sentence since it is one of those dazzling sentences. Okay? While one enjoys sense gratification, it may be that there is some feeling of happiness, but actually that so-called feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer. Okay? That feeling of happiness is our enemy. Just like Arjuna, he said to Krishna, take my chariot out onto the middle of the battlefield. I want to see who is the enemy arrayed against me. You see? And Krishna took the chariot out into the middle of the battlefield, and Arjuna was able to look over the field and see all the various powerful generals. So in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is giving a hint to Arjuna where the enemy lies. And he says he lies within our senses and our mind and our intelligence. Because these three partners in crime, cohorts, conspirators, they all work together to cause us to forget the real benefit of the human form of life, which is to be able to go back to home, back to God in one lifetime. So Prabhupada says here, self-control means rejecting anything which is detrimental to our Krishna consciousness. Inasmuch as, just like if one is in a balloon, a gas balloon going up, and the balloon is coming down, then one has to throw off some of the weight. You understand? Or the ship is going down, they start throwing everything over. Everything overboard, throwing all over. Got to keep the ship up. Okay? They throw all the unnecessary things overboard. So we have to fearlessly discard anything which is detrimental to our being able to retain our enthusiasm to chant the holy name and our enthusiasm to share the holy name. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, another beautiful line, Srila Prabhupada says, this Krishna consciousness movement is nothing more than chanting Hare Krishna and teaching others the urgency to chant. Huh? Nothing more than chanting and teaching others the urgency to chant. A man once asked me on an airplane, why am I chanting? He asked me why I was swinging with my hand with the reeds. So I said, I'm just reciting a special prayer. It's a mantra. I'm reciting the names of Lord Krishna. And he said, why are you doing that? And I said, because my very survival depends upon it. Inasmuch as my breathing gives my body life, this chanting gives my soul life. And he was so taken with that answer, we spoke for 4 hours. We talked for 4 hours while we were flying, all about the simple necessity. At the end I said, people ask me, why are you chanting? And I always say, why aren't you chanting? It's like, I said, it's as silly as if someone said, why are you breathing? I'm saying, you're not breathing? Why not? Why aren't you breathing? You mean you're not breathing? Yeah? Just like the Italians, they're famous. They make jokes about the Italian people, that they always want to feed you. I had Italian friends growing up, and when we wanted to get a meal, we'd just go to their house, because we knew their mother would feed us. That's what they do. You come in the house, you boys are not hungry? You're not hungry? They ask it like that. You're not hungry? If they don't ask, we get upset. Sometimes I would ask, you're not going to ask me if I'm not hungry? They always want to feed you. I have a little something on the stove. Just give me 5 minutes. I'll heat it up. Huh? One famous comedian in America, he said, if a woman wants to get a man, she has to learn the skill of always keeping one pot on the stove with something in it. One pot on the stove with something in it. He said, you can be this, you can be that, but you have to learn how to keep a pot on the stove. And that is this Krishna consciousness movement. We keep a pot on the stove at all times. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna. Hare, Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama, Rama. Hare, Hare. I always marvel at the devotees. They travel long distances. They come from so many different places. And then they pull out of their bag a little box or a little bag with some prasadam from some obscure temple or some deity somewhere. And the prasadam is 10 days old. And it's dried up and it doesn't have any real natural appeal. But everyone puts their hand out. Quick, give me some prasad. Isn't it? That's the devotees are eager to get the mercy of Krishna in the form of the holy name, in the form of Mahaprasadam, and most importantly, in the form of the association of the devotees. Just like we're now associating with Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada said, one should become accustomed to this and reject anything which is against the path of spiritual progress. This is real renunciation. The senses are so strong that they're always anxious to have sense gratification. But one should not cater to these demands, which are not necessary. Have you ever had a child? How many here have children? Raise your hands. Well, I've had plenty. And each one of them does the same thing. When they want your attention, they come and they sit next to you and they do this. You know, you're talking with someone, and they're like, Pita, Pita, Pita. You're like, okay, just wait 1 second. Pita, Pita. You know? And my one son, he would become angry when I wouldn't respond to that, so he would grab my glasses and run like a monkey. If he couldn't get my attention in a favorable way, he would get my attention in an unfavorable way. That's like the senses. Huh? Always knocking on our door. Give me this, give me that. Pita, pita, pita. You see? So Prabhupada says we should not cater to their demands. Alright? The senses should only be gratified to keep the body fit so that one can discharge his duty in advancing in spiritual life. The most important and uncontrollable sense is the tongue. If one can control the tongue, then there is every possibility of controlling the other senses. The function of the tongue is to taste and to vibrate. Therefore, by systematic regulation, the tongue should always be engaged in tasting the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna. As far as the eyes are concerned, they should not be allowed to see anything but the beautiful form of Krishna. That will control the eyes. Similarly, the ears should be engaged in hearing about Krishna, the nose in smelling the flowers offered to Krishna. This is the process of devotional service. And it is understood here that Bhagavad Gita is simply expounding the science of devotional service. Devotional service is the main and sole objective. Unintelligent commentators in the Bhagavad Gita try to divert the mind of the reader to other subjects, but there is no other subject in the Bhagavad Gita than devotional service. False ego means accepting the body as oneself. When one understands that he's not this body and is the soul within, he comes to his real ego. Ego is there. False ego is condemned. But not real ego. In the Vedic literature, it is said, I am Brahman, I am soul, this I am. The sense of self also exists in the liberated stage of self-realization. this sense of I am is ego. But when the sense of I am is applied to this false body, it is false ego. When the sense of self is applied to reality, that is real ego. There are some philosophers who say we should give up our ego. But we cannot give up our ego, because ego means identity. We ought, of course, to give up the false identification with the body. One should try to understand the distress of accepting death, old age, and disease. Again, that's a beautiful sentence. Think of the words Prabhupada used. Accepting. Accepting. We accepted this. We had a choice, and we accepted it. Think about that. And if we accepted birth, death, disease, and old age, we can also what? What also can we do? If we can accept it, we can reject it. We can reject it. Okay? If we can accept birth, death, and old age, and disease, we can also reject it. And when people say, take this as a line, when someone asks you, why do you chant Hare Krishna? Why? Because I have rejected birth, death, disease, and old age. And I have accepted my permanent position now as an eternal servant of Krishna. How am I going to revive that? Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! Krishna Krishna! Hare Hare! Hare Rama! Hare Rama! Rama Rama! Hare Hare! I have rejected it as unnecessary, as unwanted, as undesirable, as unpleasant. Very unpleasant. Should I go on? Hare Krishna. Okay. There are descriptions in various Vedic literatures of birth. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the world of the unborn, the child's state in the womb of the mother, its suffering, etc., are all very graphically described. It should be thoroughly understood that birth is distressful. Because we forget how much distress we have suffered within the womb of the mother, we do not make any solution to the repetition of birth and death. Everything in this material world, they try to paint it with a broad brush of artificial beauty. Huh? As if birth is some sweet, tender, it's like a Hallmark gift card. Huh? It's not like that. It's not like that. Birth is not easy. It's not easy for the mother. It's not easy for the child. It's not easy for the doctor. It's not easy for the father. It's not easy for anyone. There are so many possible risks, so many possible reversals, so many fears, right? There are so many problems that can occur. Everyone's anxious. And birth is itself considered such a miracle, such a wonderful miracle. And death is seen as so unwanted and so horrible. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, what does he say? For one who has taken birth, death is certain. Right? So if birth is a miracle, death is also a miracle. Now how to make it successful? He passed away. How was that? He was successful. What do you mean successful? How was he successful? He passed away. I mean, what more is that? No, he passed away correctly. There's a correct way and an incorrect way to pass away. And the science of Krishna consciousness is the science learning the correct way, the proper way, the miraculous way. Why is it miraculous? Because we've had so many deaths already, and every one of them was horrible, followed by another equally horrible birth. And now, suddenly, we wake up in Vaikuntha. Huh? Recently, one of my god sisters discovered that she had cancer at 52, same age as myself. She discovered this 3 weeks before she left her body. She was given such short notice. And she was surrounded by 25 devotees. And they were round the clock for the last 3 days of her life, chanting Hare Krishna. She led such a simple life. You have no idea how simple this woman was. She worshipped her deities strictly every day. She had one child. She was so chaste to her husband. She was so dedicated to her husband that when she left her body, she called him to her bed and embraced him and asked him, please give me your permission. I have to leave. I cannot bear this anymore. And he didn't want her to go. But he said, please, you go back to Krishna. Wait for me. Pray to Krishna for me. And she said, I can't leave unless you personally let me go. 30 minutes later, she was gone. And she was looking up, and the devotees were chanting, and she was looking up, and she said, oh, they're so beautiful. Do you see them? And none of the devotees could see. But she could see. Somehow the Krishna let her see. She was not a big preacher, big sannyasi. Huh? She didn't do anything of notoriety that we would say, oh, he's a big devotee, he's a big preacher, blah, blah, blah. Prabhupada one time said, beware of this term, big devotee. Sincere devotee, that's important. Big devotee, there's the only big devotee is Lord Nityananda and Lord Balaram. All other devotees are simple, pure devotees, sincerely serving Prabhupada, Radha Swami, etc., etc., etc. But she was very, very committed to the simple process of chanting Hare Krishna. And every year we had a festival in North Carolina. Indradumya Swami would come and he would put on this festival. And every year at the end of this festival, she would come to Udayananda Prabhu and Indradumya Swami, and she would offer her obeisances, and she would stand up and she would say, every year, she would say, thank you so much, Maharaj. That was the most wonderful festival I have ever experienced in my life. And it got to the point where Maharaj would laugh. He said, but you said that last year. She said, yes, but this year the festival's even better. Huh? So each year she saw it as better and better and better. So, this is the reality. Birth and death, they are very difficult. No one wants to be diseased. And no one wants to become old. But there is no avoiding these. Unless we have a pessimistic view of this material life, considering the distresses of birth, death, old age, and disease, there is no impetus for our making advancement in spiritual life. One time Prabhupada said, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, now in this human form of life, let me become a little bit pessimistic. That's how he translated the Sanskrit. Atato Brahma Jigyasa, now in this human form of life, let me become a little bit pessimistic. Because in the animal kingdom, they don't do that. Every day the birds wake up, every day they're singing. It's a beautiful day. They always think it's a beautiful day. As for detachment from children, wife, and home, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are natural objects of affection. But when they are not favorable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. The best process for making the home pleasant is Krishna consciousness. If one is full in Krishna consciousness, he can make his home very happy, because this process of Krishna consciousness is very easy. One need only chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Accept the remnants of foodstuff offered to Krishna, have some discussion on books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and engage oneself in deity worship. These four things will make one happy. One should train the members of his family in this way. The family members can sit down morning and evening and chant the holy names. If one can mold his family life in this way to develop Krishna consciousness, following these four principles, then there is no need to change from family life to renounced life. But if it is not congenial, not favorable for spiritual advancement, then family life should be abandoned. One must sacrifice everything to realize or serve Krishna, just as Arjuna did. Arjuna did not want to kill his family members, but when he understood that these family members were impediments to his Krishna realization, He accepted the instruction of Krishna and fought and killed them. In all cases, one should be detached from the happiness and distress of family life, because in this world, one can never be fully happy, nor can one be fully miserable. Happiness and distress are concomitant factors of material life. One should learn to tolerate, as advised in Bhagavad Gita. One can never restrict the coming and going of happiness and distress. So one should be detached from the materialistic way of life and be automatically equipoised in both cases. Generally, when we get something desirable, we're happy. And when we get something undesirable, we're distressed. But if we are actually in the spiritual position, these things will not agitate us. To reach that stage, we have to practice unbreakable devotional service. Devotional service to Krishna without deviation means engaging oneself in the 9 processes of devotional service: chanting, hearing, worshipping, offering respect, etc., as described in the last verse of the 9th chapter. That process should be followed. Naturally, when one is adapted to the spiritual way of life, he will not want to mix with materialistic men. That would go against his grain. One may test himself by seeing how far he is inclined to live in a solitary place without unwanted association. Naturally, a devotee has no taste for unnecessary sporting or cinema going or enjoying some social function, because he understands that these are simply a waste of time. There are many research scholars and philosophers who study sex life or some other subject, but according to Bhagavad Gita, such research work and philosophical speculation have no value. One time on a walk in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada, there was a huge puddle of mud and water. And as we were walking by, the water moved. And what was just like a snout, which we couldn't really see, became a head. And then the head became a whole body. And the whole body manifested. It was a giant hog. Just a big hog. All right? And he came up out of this muddy, dirty water. And immediately he went running after a female hog. And Prabhupada started laughing. And he said, "Dr. Freud's philosophy." He said, "Yes, I've seen. In many libraries around the world, they have many, many sections, many, many books written on this sex subject. Sex psychology, love, romance, family life. Even in India, Prabhupada said, we have our Kama Shastra. So much is written on the subject." Prabhupada said, "But even the hogs, they understand this business. They don't need to read books on this subject. But they all have a PhD, Prabhupada said." You see? In America, literally, you can go to the university and they will teach these subjects. You can get degrees on the study of human, they call it human sexuality. Okay? And this is their field. But Prabhupada, he says very clearly, it's all nonsense. Prabhupada actually says, that is more or less nonsensical. According to Bhagavad Gita, one should make research by philosophical discretion into the nature of the soul. One should make research to understand the self. That is recommended here. As far as self-realization is concerned, it is clearly stated here that bhakti yoga is especially practical. As soon as there is a question of devotion, one must consider the relationship between the soul, the super soul and the individual soul. The individual soul and the super soul cannot be one, at least in the bhakti conception, the devotional conception of life. This service of the individual soul to the supreme soul is eternal, as it is clearly stated. So bhakti, or devotional service, is eternal. One should be established in that philosophical conviction. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it is explained, those who are actually knowers of the truth know that the self is realized in 3 different phases, as Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. Bhagavan is the last word in the realization of the absolute truth. Therefore, one should reach up to that platform of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus engage in the devotional service of the Lord. That is the perfection of knowledge. Beginning from practicing humility up to the point of realization of the Supreme Truth, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, this process is just like a staircase beginning from the ground floor and going to the top floor. Now on this staircase, staircase, there are so many people who have reached the first floor, the second floor, the third floor. But unless one reaches the top floor, which is the understanding of Krishna himself, he is still at the lower stage of knowledge. If anyone wants to compete with God and at the same time make advancement in spiritual knowledge, he will be frustrated. It is clearly stated that without humility, understanding is not truly possible. To think oneself God is most puffed up. Although the living entity is always being kicked by the stringent laws of nature, he still thinks, I am God because of ignorance. The beginning of knowledge, therefore, is amanitva, humility. One should be humble and know that he is subordinate to the Lord. Due to rebellion against the Lord, one becomes subordinate then to material nature. One must know and be convinced of this truth. So Krishna says, all this, all of these I declare to be knowledge. And besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. So without learning this 18 principles of knowledge, our cultivation of any other form of knowledge in this material world will yield to us, at best, a temporary result. In India, you have your famous families, right? The Birlas, the Tatas, some others I don't know. In America, we have what they would call the Rockefellers. In Europe, they have the Rothschild. Okay? But one time, Srila Prabhupada said, you may be Rockefeller, you may be any feller, but you will meet with death. And before you meet with death, you had better take advantage of the Pure Devotees Association. And you had better take advantage of the Holy Name. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Hare. Then our life becomes perfect. We become no more a danger or a menace to ourself. No more a danger or a menace to our family. No more a danger or a menace to our society. We become nothing but a positive and welcome asset to everyone. And our life becomes perfect. So I thank you for your patience. I spoke a little longer than I planned, but that section of Bhagavad Gita is certainly, as I said, dazzling. And I would ask, humbly ask, to make a practice of keeping a little book next to you. And when you read something that Prabhupada says, some sentence, write it down. And later, look at that sentence, okay? And realize how much benefit is there in just a few words spoken by the pure, self-realized pure devotee. Lava matra saru sangha, sarva siddhi hoy. Okay? Hare Krishna. So what's the next part of the program? Kirtan or prasadam or kirtan? I'll sing a little bit. I might not be able to sing too long. We have some good mridanga players. Radha Gopinatha, Radha Gopinatha Raya.